Well, as some of you know, Paige and I got to go out of the country a little earlier this summer, and we spent a few days in England and in Ireland, and both of those countries are not radically different from our own. They're English-speaking. We share a lot of common history, a lot of culture, and yet when you are a foreigner in a different land, even if those places are very similar, it's not hard to notice some differences of culture and how you do things. And some differences are small and some differences are big. And it got me thinking. And so in preparation for the sermon this morning, I actually decided to Google and see what some of the most common differences were from people from other countries when they think of the United States and when they visit the United States. What are some of the most common differences that they notice, that they talk about? Here are a couple of the differences that they have. So, they can't help but notice that when our sports teams win, we talk about them as if they are world champs. But it's a national league with an occasional Canadian team or two thrown in for good measure. In some cultures, they can't understand why we leave our shoes on when we walk through a house. It is rude. It is to leave your shoes on. It's expected that you take them off. The length of our campaigns blows some people's minds. The amount of money that campaigns, billions and billions of dollars can be spent, which is not even legal in certain countries. Tipping is seen as odd in some cultures. It's actually considered rude or inappropriate in some cultures. Watching TV and ads on TV urging you to urge your doctor to write you a prescription for that prescription, odd to some people. Being one of three nations in the world that is not on the metric system is odd. The only industrialized nation in the world not on the metric system is odd. Now, bonus question, can you name the other two nations in the world not on the metric system? Yeah, I wouldn't have known it either. It is Burma and Liberia. We're in good company. That's okay. That's okay. And then you get into all the things as it relates to food and drink. The size of the drinks and that you get a free refill on an already really large cup of soda, that blows some people's minds. The amount of ice we use in drinks all year round, even in the dead of winter. And if you go to another country and you ask for ice water and you see one cube in there, then you start to realize, I'm not in the States anymore. There's quite a few southern dishes that show up. Marshmallows on top of sweet potatoes, or chicken and waffles is one that some people have a hard time wrapping their brain around. I'll be honest, I have a hard time wrapping my brain around that one. Grits is one they're not even sure what is in that bowl, much less why so many people love them. Whatever mad scientist came up with this stuff, there's confusion about. I think that speaks for itself. Pop-Tarts blows some people's mind, and all the colorful, sugary cereal, just row after row of options for the cereal. So, here's my question. What makes something normal to some people and abnormal to others? What makes customs widespread and in one culture and just downright weird in another? What is it that makes some practices and some people seem so strange. So Matthew 25 is a familiar parable. And if you've heard this parable, it sticks with you. It starts with an image of a king on the throne. And the parable describes separating out people, like a shepherd would separate sheep from goat at the end of the day that had been grazing together. And in this story, the means of determining how the separation plays out is shocking to everyone who hears it. Now, let me tell you what is not shocking in the story. What is not shocking is an expectation that God's people would feed the hungry and give a drink to the thirsty and clothe the needy and care for the sick and visit the prisoners and offer hospitality to a stranger, to a foreigner. That's not the shocking part of this story. In fact, those kinds of folks would show up in lists that show up a lot in Scripture. And we see other people that are included in those lists, like other people, we're going to keep pressing forward, other people who show up in those lists, like widows and orphans, and people with all kinds of illnesses or disabilities. So those who have trouble walking or seeing or hearing. Jesus' hearers would have known their Old Testament well enough to know that these folks show up on the radar of God a lot. And that God has an expectation for God's people to continue to show compassionate justice to all of these folks, because those are folks whom God deeply loves and is concerned about and cares for. Here's just one example from Psalm 146:6. God upholds the cause of the oppressed and gives food to the hungry. The Lord sets prisoners free. The Lord gives sight to the blind. The Lord lifts up those who are bowed down. The Lord loves the righteous. The Lord watches over the foreigner and sustains the fatherless and widow, but he frustrates the ways of the wicked. The Lord reigns forever. What's shocking in Matthew 25 is not that Jesus would depict the king as concerned, deeply concerned for the hungry and the thirsty and the naked and the prisoner and the foreigner. That's not the shocking part. Now, that can be shocking in our modern ears because it is easy to turn Christianity into little more than a private, personal relationship with God concerning my private, personal salvation that is devoid of public responsibility and love in action. But it was a given for Jesus. And faithful Jews knew that. They understood that. What was shocking in this parable was not that the king was concerned for these people. It's that the king's love went so deep that he was inseparably connected to them. That he identified with them so deeply. That when service is done, that when love is done, that when kindness is given to all of these folks, that it didn't just warm the heart of the king, it was the king who was on the receiving end, or the king who was denied kindness and justice and compassion. Whatever you did, or did not do, for these considered least, you did or did not do for me. And once you hear that passage, it's hard to forget it, right? Or Hebrews 13, I'm going to reread it again, starting in verse 1. Keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by so doing, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. Well, that's interesting. That'll get your attention too. And it sounds a bit like a bad Christian pickup line, doesn't it? Pardon me, are you an angel in disguise? But if you know your Old Testament, you know this is actually an allusion to a story from Genesis 18, where Abraham, the patriarch, and Sarah, the matriarch, have three strangers show up unexpectedly. And they did what you were supposed to do. They offered shelter. They offered provision. They offered food to these strangers. And can you guess what the strangers turned out to be? You people are smart. They're angels. They're not just strangers. These are angels. And it gives us a glimpse into a value throughout the ancient culture. It wasn't just a Jewish value. Any decent person was supposed to offer hospitality. Hospitality to the stranger that provided, that cared for, that made sure that some basic needs were taken care of. Food and drink and shelter. Hospitality was enormously important in the ancient world. And it wasn't just the Old Testament. It is a virtue that continues to be encouraged in the New Testament as well, that Christians would be people of hospitality. In fact, it was one of the characteristics that shows up among leaders of the church. Those who would be leaders of the church are supposed to be people who practice hospitality. But it's helpful for us to understand that there is a distinction, or at least a broadening and a widening of what that concept involved. Because hospitality, as they understood it, Christian hospitality was not just inviting friends or family over to the house for a cookout. It's not just inviting your life group, as good as that is and as wonderful as that is. It's not just saying, well, we'll take the month of October and you guys can have November and that's our hospitality. That is good and that is wonderful. Open up what you have to those who are in this room. But that's not the vision, at least not the full vision of hospitality in Scripture. Hospitality in Scripture is the kind of image that Jesus paints in Luke 14, where he says, if you're having a meal, a banquet, don't just invite the people who are already well-fed and well-connected. Let me tell you the kind of people that you invite. The overlooked, the oppressed, the marginalized, the forgotten, the kind of people that don't usually get the invite when a lot of other people do, the kind of people who don't help you climb the social ladder when you invite them over. Those are the kind of people that you invite. In fact, something interesting is going on in this Hebrews passage. So verse 1 says, keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. Well, in Greek, that verse is really just three little Greek words. And you know a little Greek, whether you know a little Greek. Because the second word in that verse is the word Philadelphia. And you know that word. Now, it might help to get out of your mind the actual city of Philadelphia or some of the fans of Philadelphia, because when you think of them, you think of people who will boo Santa Claus and throw snowballs at him. And so maybe get that one out of your mind. But you know the meaning of the word Philadelphia, right? We know that Philadelphia is the city of brotherly love. Combines two Greek words into one. Love, phileo, and then adelphos, brother. So that's verse one. Keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. Verse two, do not forget to show hospitality to strangers. Now that Greek word for hospitality is really interesting because it also combines two Greek words, phileo, love, but this time, instead of love a brother, the word is love of stranger. The Greek word for hospitality is love of stranger. Now, isn't that interesting? Because I'll be honest, I struggle enough with verse 1. Just keep on keeping on with loving brother and sister. Sometimes, for a lot of us, that can be hard enough. The people who are already in our circle, friends or family or fellow church members. We realize this from time to time when family gets together around the dinner table and we realize, hey, we don't always see things the same way. We don't always agree. We've got some challenges. Churches face this on a regular basis. We have the most important thing in common. The love of God, the love of Christ that unites us and compels us, but we also know that there are differences. And we come at things in different ways and we arrive at different conclusions and we realize, we're going to have this love thing put to the test to see if we can keep loving one another in our differences. And the Hebrew writer says, well, that's very interesting, but that's just verse one. Love brother and sister, absolutely. But hospitality sends us out. You can't just settle with love of brother or sister, those who are already in your circle. Real hospitality is love of the stranger. I don't know if you've noticed, but sometimes strangers can be strange. People who are other can be odd. Those who are foreigners feel foreign to us. There is difference. There is distance. There's things that we don't always share in common. I started the sermon with some things that aren't all that significant. How much ice do you put in your drink? How many refills of soda do you get? And they still qualify as free. But there are things that are weightier, that are more important, that are more significant, and it makes those distances seem pretty big. Welcoming those who are very different does not always feel normal. In fact, what is more normal is another word that's worked our way into our vocabulary. It is xenophobia, yet another Greek word we know. We know phobia for fear, and xenos is that word for stranger. And that is more common. That is more natural. That's what comes to a lot of us. It is not love of stranger. It is fear of stranger, right? It is fear of the unknown, fear that of those that we don't really connect with. There's a phrase that a lot of kids learn even growing up today. It is not love of stranger. It is what? Stranger danger. And there's some wisdom to that, although some are trying to redirect how we use that phrase. But the wisdom is we don't want our kids to be vulnerable. We don't want them to be trusting to people they shouldn't be trusting to. But I wonder how many of us adults carry that into adulthood. When the love of Christ compels us not to be people of fear, but people of love. not to be people who always circle the wagons among others who are just like us, but people who open our arms wide and offer the embrace of Jesus, so that fear of stranger continues to be replaced by love of stranger. That is Christian hospitality. I can't help but remember what Jesus says in Matthew 5. And he's talking about enemies, but I think it applies to the stranger. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than the others? Don't even pagans do that? Don't just love the familiar. Don't just love your family. Love those who are different, who are foreign, who are strange, who are odd, the prisoner, the sick, the hungry, the thirsty, the outsider, the oppressed, the other, because that's what it means to be Christian. And it might just be an angel that you're entertaining, but Jesus says it is most certainly God that you're entertaining.